From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control Deck, and in spirit, because today we have our returning super producer, Seth Johnson. Everybody give him a hand. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I was thinking about this. How many people, on average, do you think are listening to today's show on a cell phone or maybe on a laptop with another electronic device on in the background?
I would say many, if not most.
I'm thinking a lot of people probably have their phone in their pocket or on one of those cool little armbands when they're jogging.
Runners. Okay. Or people who want to look like they have ran or will run somewhere in the future.
Yep.
I should chase those people? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Okay.
Give them some stakes. You know what I mean? I think that's what's missing for joggers today.
I feel like jogging is just practice for, you know, running away from something. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like these people are very paranoid.
This might be a hot take, but one of my very old and dear friends years back, you guys know him, he told me that one of the first signs of gentrification in a neighborhood was people running when no one's chasing them.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
He's a weird guy, but I thought it was a good point.
I think so, too.
But the reason that we're even mentioning this, like multiple devices going on in the same audio space, is because that's one of the main things we're going to be talking about today. Our devices and potentially monitoring themselves.
Right. Are you addicted to your phone, your television, or your tablet? Are you one of the people, like many of us, who can't really hold a conversation without at least checking in on this thing? I'm guilty of that.
He's literally doing it right now, folks.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of waving it around. Do you find yourself tuning out, you know, when the conversation is taking its course and then finding yourself tuning in to the closest device, whatever that is?
What?
Like, right? Exactly. So just for the lay of the land here, we have three laptops out open right now.
Yeah.
We all have our phones somewhere near our person, and we have, you know, a bevy of AV equipment that is probably the most innocent of the contraptions here, right, in this room. And if you are one of those people who constantly finds yourself clicking in or dropping out of conversation, tuning in to something else, you are not alone. Let's reiterate that, because at first it sounds kind of nice, right? It sounds kind of like, oh, warm, fuzzy, huggy time. No. Think about it. You are not alone in multiple senses of the phrase. Here are the facts.
Smartphones, smart devices, smart everything, really. It's everywhere, and you're probably working with one right now just because you need the technology to listen to this. Today, let's look at the Pew Research organization there. They've done, you know, they do statistics like nobody else. Mm-hmm. It is estimated, they say, that more than 5 billion people have mobile devices, and over half of these connections are smartphones. So they're doing more than just making a connection via satellite to another phone somewhere, or from, you know, it's not a landline anymore. It's a phone. It's an encyclopedia. It's absolutely everything you could possibly do.
I always say it's like Ziggy from Quantum Leap.
Yes, no.
We literally have that in our hands now.
Oh boy.
Doesn't quite predict the future, but it comes damn close.
Yeah, and that's a global number.
Yes,
right?
Throughout
that's
the
a global
world.
Number. So more than half of the people alive today have one of these things. I'm holding up the phone again like a prop. It's one of technology's biggest breakthrough success stories of recent decades, because just a few decades ago, no one had them.
Exactly.
Now 5 billion people have these.
So get this. In the U.S. specifically, we've got 9 in 10 or more Americans aged 34 and under who have had a smartphone since 2015, while the ownership rate among the 50 and older age group has risen from 53% to 67% over the same period. One of my dearest, oldest friends who is in his early 50s very purposefully still has a dumb phone.
Oh, Harry?
Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much on purpose. He is old school in that way, where he rejects a lot of this, like, over-connectedness.
Yeah.
And consequently, he's a much more thoughtful person than a lot of people that I know.
Well, after this episode, most of us are going to want to switch back.
I know,
Verizon, where I am, offers a flip phone option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nokia's never break, too.
Well, there you go. It seems more and more like a good option. We'll get into it, though.
Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't just stop with smartphones. We also are talking about smart TVs. And yes, Matt, you're absolutely right. This may well ruin some people's day, but this is important to know. So we checked out Statista when we wanted to find some more stats and specs on smart TVs. The global TV set unit sales are projected to increase from 229 million units in 2016 to 259 million by 2020. That's pretty nuts because, you know, televisions shouldn't be this sort of disposable resource. They never were, right? Mm-hmm. But now more and more people are buying TVs more and more frequently.
I mean, I have a smart TV that is made by Amazon. I'm sure it's made by some third-party manufacturer from overseas.
Oh, you have an Amazon smart TV?
You know why, though, you guys?
Why is that?
Because it was dirt cheap, and it works great. And I like the interconnectedness of it. But we'll get into some of the features that this you call it a feature.
Yeah.
It's really more like a bug.
No.
Like literally a listening surveillance device.
It's a feature, but just not for you.
Yeah.
Feature or bug is in the eye of the beholder.
That's absolutely right. And in this case, the eye of the beholder is big data.
Yeah. As of 2018, 70% of the televisions being sold across the planet are smart TVs. And a smart TV, at the most basic explanatory level, is a television that combines a lot of features one would associate with a computer, right? So if you, like Noel, own a smart TV, you can watch your favorite shows, but you don't have to just watch them when they're on. You can also, you know, dial it up on demand, for instance. You can connect it with your phone.
Not to mention it's very customizable. You can combine all of these different services into one kind of widget box, let's call it, where you have your Netflix, you got your Hulu, you got your Amazon, which obviously my Amazon TV leans pretty heavily on. The global search on my Amazon TV searches like all of Amazon, and it gives you products, it gives you TV shows, it gives you other stuff that's, you know, in your set of apps or subscriptions, but very much leaning toward the Amazon side of things.
Yeah, the most important thing about a smart TV, when we call it that, is that it's able to communicate with your network or the network that it's attached to and could possibly see all of the other devices that are attached to that network.
Could possibly, sure. this is true, though. So Android is probably the most widely used operating system among smart TVs, but that by no means should be taken to indicate that other OSs aren't in there. iPhones are in there as well. Apple has a hand in this. And while smart device addiction is real, especially when we talk about mobile devices, I think we should bracket that as the subject of its own episode in the future, assuming we don't get blackbagged or disappeared. There's more to the story behind the purposefully addictive technology here. You see, while we stare into that electronic abyss, even though we might not know it, sometimes things in that abyss, in this sort of black mirror, are staring back at you.
And we'll get into that right after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. So we talked about smart devices. They're popular. Everybody loves them. They're the hottest thing since fresh baked sliced bread, whatever.
They do all the stuff we need.
They do all the stuff we want too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with smart devices comes the concept of surveillance. And we've talked about this a little bit before in our previous episodes on big data, big data, whatever your preference may be.
Oh, yeah. And if you're worried about, you know, your smart devices tracking you or anything, and you still have one of these Amazon Echoes or maybe a Google personal assistant, like a Home or something plugged in and turned on, you can stop worrying. They've already got you. It's over.
It's
too late.
Yeah.
We're having a little bit of fun here. That's not fully true.
You think this is fun, Matt?
But there is some sand to this idea, and we're going to get into it a little bit later.
Remember back when PDAs were a thing?
Sure.
Personal digital assistants?
Yeah.
Now we have robot overlords that are, like, doing our bidding. But are they really? Are we not really just doing their bidding?
Oh, God.
Right? It's like the old, oh, man, there's so many weird ways to go with this. But we should talk about the nuts and bolts, too, right? Because we know our smart devices have to keep track of the user. You have GPS. You have the Waze app or something. You're mm-hmm. driving. You have Lyft. You have Uber, what have you, you know?
All things that make the stuff function and make it convenient for you.
And then there are also a lot of apps that say, hey, we want permission to access your microphone or your location. And you're like, wow, Candy Crush, this is getting serious. You know, I'm picking that as an example. I don't know. That's not one. Okay,
no.
Great. Well, at least we have Candy Crush to remain as a sacrosanct example of good programming. But when our smart devices are keeping track of us, the kind of surveillance that they have is, as we can tell, squarely aimed at tracking our preferences. Let me figure out what you like, says your mobile device, such that I can give you better offers, make it easier for you to say yes to things in the future. And that's why if you're on our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, you'll see all the strange, insidious examples ranging from hilarious to disquieting about how these algorithms can hone in. I think, Noel, you posted a meme recently that was Facebook related.
Yeah, I did. It was one of these great Simpsons memes where it was just an image of like Bart Simpson in bed and Homer leaning in really creepily, like eyeball to eyeball. And it was, I think Homer was labeled as Facebook ads and Bart was labeled as things I said out loud but never actually Google searched or whatever.
Or some people even say, I was just thinking about this.
It definitely started a conversation of people giving examples of these things. And I've experienced it too. We have a lot of advertisers that like vet stuff through us. And sometimes I feel like I just say it or like I'm talking to you guys about it and I've never even like read copy or seen an email or gone to the site. Next thing you know, Facebook's serving me up, you know, Tushy or whatever. Bad example, but like, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen it happen before.
Sure.
No, there's a reason for that. So, you know, we get into what are the motives behind all of this surveillance? Mm-hmm. We kind of talked about a little bit, tracking our preferences and everything. But honestly, like, what are you going to do with all of that? If you start to really think about it and understand what the economic model is behind all this stuff, you realize that it's because you, me, each of us, we are the batteries of the economic system.
We're the product.
It's literally the matrix.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are living in the matrix, everybody. We are inside our pods. Our pods consist of your smartphone and your smart TV and all the things you interact with, your laptop. That is us. We are the byproducts of a lifestyle obsession, Fight Club.
No, and here's the thing, too. I mentioned this off air. I got that Amazon TV because it had a lot of features. It had really high resolution, and it was dirt cheap. And TV prices, way down. And as we saw at the beginning of the show, TV sales, way up. And I think this, you can't ignore that there's an exchange going on there with, like, we're giving up this part of ourselves in exchange for cheaper and better more efficient technology.
Well, one must ask, at a certain point, one must ask where the income for the company is actually arriving from,
yes.
Right? We've mentioned before, one of my favorite examples, and I won't go into it now because longtime listeners have already heard this. For a time, Target, the corporation, the retail store, was not making most of its money off of selling, you know, people baby toys and trousers. Do people still say trousers?
Yeah, trousers.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Knickerbockers, whatever. They were making the bulk of their income, a huge proportion of it, from selling their security system infrastructure to other companies, kind of like the way McDonald's makes most of its money through real estate. So it's okay to sell a television at a phenomenal loss, right? When you know you're going to recoup that money and then some on something else. And I think that's what's happening with the televisions. Would you agree?
I mean, it sure seems like that to me.
So we know that no matter who you are, no matter where you are in this wide world or just orbiting around it, you have something that really wants to be your friend, wants to be your best friend, your teacher, your mother, your secret lover, to quote Homer Simpson. And this thing that can't wait to be your best friend is called the advertising industry. It's had its eye on you for a while and already knows a lot about you, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah. It knows a great deal about you, but it wants to go deeper. It wants to go therapist style on you. It wants to know what you love. What do you hate? Who do you trust? And also, how much liquid cash can you get your hands on in the short term? No, okay, again, we're joking a little bit, but you get the point. For real, they want to know how much you can spend and what you would want to spend it on if you absolutely could right now. If somebody just popped something in front of your face right now, what is the number one thing you would buy? Because we'll find it, and we will show it to you, and you will buy it.
Yeah, and companies just gobble up all of this data because the level of technology that we're at right now isn't quite as sophisticated as they would like.
No.
We're getting there. They're certainly pushing it every day. But right now, it's just kind of like a throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks approach, you know?
Artificial intelligence, it turns out, in this regard at least, is not that intelligent. And it needs a ton of help. So
it's efficient as all hell.
Sure.
But it cannot make the connections a lot of times unless it is helped out by a human user.
It's still a black box, though. Mm-hmm.
Great example. I often get served ads for things that I've already bought.
I was going to say that too. That's like we're at the stage where in the Terminator franchise, the original cyborgs were easily discernible from organic humans,
yeah.
right? Because it's a bit ridiculous. There's not any human advertiser who would say, well, this person just bought a toilet, so you know what they need? 5 more toilets.
Yeah.
You know, that's like what's going to happen? Are you going to just bought a toilet? You'll see an ad for it and then you'll go, "No, I don't know. Maybe I'll just treat myself." It's bizarre.
Well, maybe you're a contractor. Maybe it thinks we're all contractors and we're all building out
that's
bathrooms.
Fair point.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And we know that companies have a lot they want to do with this data even if they can't entirely get the rubber to meet the road in practice. And we'll expand that picture in a frightening way a little bit later. But for now, let's think of it this way. Companies give all the data they can get their hands on, even the stuff you would think is unimportant. They give all of that equal weighting when it comes to picking it up. There's nothing that gets ignored if it's able to be monitored and captured. And that's because AI programs, as we said, just aren't that intelligent yet. They are efficient, Matt, but they're not that intelligent. Like, think about home surveillance systems. You have Noel, you and I probably have Amazon Echoes.
Yes.
Yeah. And you have a Google Home or something like that, Matt?
Correct.
Okay. So these home surveillance systems, which is the correct term for them, these home surveillance systems have these assistants, these programs that will guess at what they think you said, but they still frequently miss the mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, but they also aren't listening, I think, in theory, unless you say that wake word, right, whatever that might be.
Sure.
No, they are always listening.
Oh, hey.
Because they have to hear the wake word.
I love doing this. Let's prank someone who's listening to one of those in their house right
now.
Alexa.
No.
Play
don't
Despacito.
Do it, Alexa. Please don't.
The remix or the original?
We're kidding. Hope we're all still friends with our various devices. But we say this to point out that these things are far from perfect, and there are a lot of people employed by these companies, human listeners, right, just like many of us listening today, who are tasked with going through these things and listening to the recording that someone said and then seeing what the assistant thought they said and then reconciling the two to build a better mousetrap for your personal information.
Yes, and that is where we get into the Amazon Echo story out of Bloomberg that we were going to talk about. And that is the fact that there are thousands of Amazon employees and contractors who, like Ben said, are tasked with literally listening to what the microphone recorded in your living room. So you were asking, Noel, about is it always listening? Yes, the microphone is always turned on as long as you've got your Alexa plugged in or your Google Home plugged in. That mic is on and it is listening. It doesn't record anything until you say Alexa or computer or Echo or whatever the keyword is.
The wake word.
Yeah.
Sure.
But
– which is a creepy phrase in and of itself if you ask me.
But that is literally an open mic sitting in your house.
It's a hot mic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where it gets really creepy. But it also gets really creepy like, okay, on the surface, it makes complete sense. It's what Ben was saying. It's quality assurance, right? It's trying to make that AI better. It's an educational thing for the system. But below the surface, like if you really break it down and you take away some of the words that are in there that make it feel like a fun and exciting new thing, there is this mic in your room. It's recording information, things that you're saying in your private home, and it's sending it to some person that you've never met. And then this stranger is going to transcribe exactly what you said in your living room. Then it's going to feed it back in that system so that when that mic hears you talk again, it knows exactly what you said.
But again, it's only after you've said the wake word. They're not transcribing all your conversations in your living room. It's all, in theory, stuff that you were attempting to communicate to the device. Otherwise, it wouldn't be any use to them. It wouldn't help them improve the algorithm at all.
My point here is that that is how it functions according to the way the creators want it to function, right?
Right.
The people who've made this device.
On the FAQ.
Yes.
Right. That's
that is
says.
The forward-facing thing. And I'm not saying Amazon is doing anything illegal or, you know, scary like that. But there is an easy route there to exploit that microphone that's in your living room. That's
well,
all
sure.
I'm saying.
So you're saying maybe if someone, a bad actor, let's say, got a hold of this, or do you think Amazon could potentially be the bad actor?
Amazon's partners, let's foreshadow it that way.
Okay.
Amazon's buddies, the folks in bed with it. But Matt, what's interesting to me about this is that you are talking in terms of an above the surface level.
Yes.
My spider sense tells me you've got a below the surface take.
No, well, the below the surface take is just, in my mind, the reality of the situation of, we've talked about it before on here, we kind of hit it a couple times in this episode already, just that we are literally bugging ourselves. And, you know, right. And you think about a world in which perhaps the powers that be end up ruling, let's just say, this United States that we live in. Let's say that some group comes along and takes over, and now it is illegal in this land to do X. And let's say your family or your living situation is X. Now there is a microphone in your living room or your kitchen or wherever it is, and if you're just having a regular conversation about what your life is and what you are doing, but it is illegal in this land and there's a mic in there,
right?
There's potential that you could be abused in some way or persecuted. That's
you know
all
it reminds
saying.
Me of the telescreens in 1984, which were like on one level seen as like a luxury and as like a really cool technological gadget where you could watch all of these whatever entertainment you so wished. But it was a two-way thing. It was monitoring you, but there's a certain acceptance of it, you know, like it's not secret monitoring. Everyone knows they're being monitored. They just know to stay in line and not fall outside of the party, you know, doctrine or whatever.
And we've
kind of found ourselves in a very similar situation. We're like complicit in our own surveillance.
Orwell was nothing if not prescient in that regard. Here's a real life example or something that could play out plausibly. And this is heavy stuff. So imagine that you live in a country that is a least economically developed country. And that country has an authoritarian government and they have strict religious laws of one sort or another. Now let's say that for a time there was a different regime and you were maybe in a same-sex relationship. And you and your partner lived your normal everyday life, right? You just happen to have your device on because you like to hear music when you cook. Who doesn't like that? But then the regime changes, and now again, same-sex relationships are forbidden or haram or whatever. And now that stuff that you said that got hoovered up into the cloud, now it makes you complicit in what that government sees as a crime. And that means that according to that government, the stuff that you did, which was perfectly fine, your relationship was perfectly fine until someone retroactively decided it wasn't. And now because you wanted to hear the remix to Ignition, now just because of the conversation that occurred around that time, now you are in hot water and there's not a recourse to help you. That's a terrifying possibility. Matt, you were telling us off air that at least some companies like Amazon attempt to quell those fears by publicly stating there are hard constraints on how long an Echo can record something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, to Amazon's defense, I am being completely conspiratorial in this. It's just one of those weird foresight things that both Ben and I were talking about there. But Amazon has stated that only a fraction of 1% of interactions with their devices actually gets transcribed in this way.
By a human,
where it gets sent off, they transcribe it, they send it back in. Since the beginning of 2019, And this is, by the way, from August of 2019 from the Ambient. So 8 months of transcribing had gone through, and only 0.2% of all requests to Alexa had actually been transcribed. So that's a very, very small number of conversations that actually get listened to and transcribed.
Interesting how they put it in percentage, though, because putting it in percentage can make something seem smaller than it is in reality.
Right. Well, it's a massive sample size, right?
Right.
And so that small percentage is actually a massive number.
Right, yeah. Right. It just sounds a little more reasonable, right?
Well, here's the great thing. Mm. When you say, hey, whatever, Alexa, Google,
he's
all
not going to do it. You're not going to do
it. I'd spread it out enough. But when you do that, generally you ask a very short request or a very short question or something to that effect.
And then it does the thing. And then like that window of monitoring is over kind of, right?
Generally, yeah. It lasts for about 2 seconds. That's the average. So when somebody is transcribing, that's literally all it says.
Do you think they make good money doing that? Or is it like, do they do
other
stuff?
No, it's Amazon. They're not getting paid very well at all.
Is it sort of like we as a company, we do a lot of transcribing interviews and stuff. You think it's very similar to that? You think they even outsource it? They couldn't outsource
it. Contractors.
It is contractors.
Some of it's contractors, some of it's employees.
Got it.
And this practice has no currently has no real legal constraints because, as we know, technology always outpaces legislation. Tale as old as time. However, I get the feeling that a lot of us were sort of aware that something's off with these home assistants or that there is some kind of transaction at play. If it's not terrible, if it's something we're okay with, we knew there was still something. And you can hear, you know, when things go wrong in 911 calls and all these other spooky stories about things going south with Google or Amazon. But what about the other devices? We have some news for you about smart TVs. Look around your room or wherever you happen to find yourself. Is there a TV in there? Things are about to get very interesting for you after a word from our sponsors.
All right, and we're back. Let's jump in to something we learned about thanks to New York Times in a 2018 article. About
failing New York Times?
They are not failing. I don't believe that.
I mean, not after this bump.
That's right. Seriously.
I mentioned this article in the gang stalking episode, so you're welcome, New York.
Yeah, yes, you did. Ben did bring this up, and we decided we were going to look into it, and we did, and now we can't look away forever. So it's a thing called Samba TV.
That sounds fun.
Samba TV.
It sounds really fun. And you know what else sounds fun? I'm going to skip down just a tad. How does this sound to you guys? Hey, how about you want to interact with your favorite shows, get recommendations based on the content you love, connect your devices for exclusive content and special offers. How about Samba Interactive TV lets you engage with your TV in a whole new way? That sounds great.
Sounds damn good.
I'm into that.
So what is Samba TV?
Oh, hey, Matt, what's Samba TV?
Okay, I'll tell you. It is a piece of software that is present in a lot of television models, some models from nearly a dozen smart TV brands. And again, this is as of late 2018. That has changed. Mm-hmm. There are more included now, but it is Sony, Sharp, Philips, a lot of that.
All the hits, all the good ones.
In this software in particular, it identifies what is being watched on the monitor, the television, by literally analyzing the pixels displayed and then comparing that data to a set of known media that exists out there.
It's a similar way like audio things or even YouTube things are flagged for copyright violations.
Yes, but in this case, it is the end user that is the actual piece of hardware that is being monitored, right?
And this was always coming. Nielsen ratings, like the Nielsen institution wanted this.
Yes.
Right?
There needed to be a way to find out who was watching what when.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, when you're talking about who, it means everybody who is around, not just that this household is watching something.
Right.
But here's the idea. Your viewing history is then in part used to suggest, as Noel was saying, as the flowery language there that's actually present in the PR from Samba TV.
Oh, yeah. They wrote that copy.
Oh, it's not only the PR. It's the opt-in message.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's used to suggest the next content that Samba TV believes you will yourself enjoy. But that is not all that Samba TV does. It also identifies all the other devices that are connected to the same network through which it is accessing the internet.
So your friend comes over, they have a phone with Wi-Fi. Now they're in the loop as well.
Yes. If you are Netflix and chilling, or whatever the kids call it these days, at somebody else's house mm-hmm. or apartment, and Samba TV is there, it knows that you're there because it can identify your device and the MAC address and all those things.
And here's the thing. This company claims that it is adhering very closely to privacy guidelines set forth by the Federal Trade Commission, that it does not directly sell any of this data. Instead, advertisers can pay the company to kind of guide the hand of the ads sure. and the placement, which makes sense. Doesn't sound too insidious, right?
Well, it's directing ads to the other devices that are present, who they believe are watching the television program, right?
Right, right. And so your opt-in stuff happens at the television, right, at the TV.
Yeah. So wait a minute.
But
so
it doesn't happen at your smartphone necessarily if you walk into someone else's house.
So I'm saying you've opted in. So how do they get around the legality of other people? Like, are they automatically part of your opt-in when they join your wireless network?
There's not, that's what I'm saying. There's not informed consent.
That's really interesting.
And also think about this. This technology is amazing. If our species was less of a garbage fire, we could use this to do wonderful things for, you know, say someone's mental health, right?
Yeah.
And someone's like, okay, I see you've watched Faces of Death 4 9 times in a row. I'd like to recommend The Great British Baking Show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Please,
just chill for a second.
Do a better job with your content consumption. No, it's totally true. And when you – let's say you plug in your new smart TV
mm-hmm.
And it has Samba on it, it will present you with that very flowery language. That's the opt-in message. There is a giant terms of service and privacy policy, you know, page that you can peruse if you wish. I believe it's 6,500 words for the terms of service and 4,000 words for the privacy policy. But why would you even bother doing that when you can interact with your favorite shows, get recommendations based on the content that you love?
That terms of service is a real page turner.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But why would you want to do that when this seems so innocuous and you just want to start playing your Fallout 4? You know?
Yeah. Well, see, that's not – the real insidious thing here is that let's put yourself in the position of you've spent, let's say, the last couple of months saving up money because you really – you know you need to get this new TV. You're really excited about it. You finally get it, right? And you're installing it. Your hands are all sweaty because you know Fallout 4, the next playthrough is about to happen. You're like, oh my God, this is – I'm so excited. You plug this thing in. You start going through the initialization process. The Samba thing pops up and you know, you literally have to decide if you're going to spend an hour parsing through all of that legalese or if you're going to get to whatever it is you wanted to get to. And most people just click enable and move forward. It has nothing to do with the flowery language or anything like that. It says enable. Okay, yes, this gets me to the next thing. Just click enable. And that is exactly what most people do.
Right. On the order of an estimated 90%, a vast majority of people do click enable. And once this stuff is up and running, it's Katie bar the doors, they used to say in days of yore. Samba sees everything that is displayed on the monitor, regardless of what you're watching or playing or how you're displaying it. It doesn't matter if you're watching TV. It doesn't matter if you're watching a film. It doesn't matter if you're broadcasting a home video, right?
Yeah, it could be literally anything. You know, if you are broadcasting a home video of something that you wouldn't want anyone else to see, Samba TV is analyzing it. It isn't necessarily matching up with any known media.
Sure.
But if you broadcast the same kind of home videos, let's say of your kids, maybe a romantic video you made with your partner. I mean, honestly, who knows? That's, again, taking a little bit further than the known technology or the known reasons for using it. But it could be used in the future by someone to figure out very personal, intimate things about you.
But it's sort of like when we read about the NSA and the way the NSA was monitoring people's phone calls. They weren't recording the actual audio. They were just capturing the metadata. So they knew how long a call lasted or, like, you know, who this web of, like, interconnectedness mm-hmm. or whatever. It's similar with this. It's not like they're recording actually what you're streaming. They're just capturing the data of what it is, how long you watched it for, et cetera.
Of the pixels.
Right.
So this is true. Even if we want to be as skeptical or I should say, as credulous as we can. And if we take those pieces of stated PR copy at their word, this still has a ton of hilarious, cartoonish vulnerabilities. You can learn too much about people, and there's no way for the end user to stop it other than try to opt out. But opting out doesn't delete all the stuff that is already learned about you. Are we being paranoid? Perhaps. Or perhaps we should introduce you to Alfonso.
Oh, God.
I love that name, Alfonso.
Okay, so just to break this down thus far, we've got our personal assistants that always are on,
snitches,
listening.
Traitors.
No matter if we're saying the keywords or not, they have their microphone on and they are listening. They aren't necessarily recording all the time, but they are. Now, you have your smartphone over there that is literally watching what you're watching too, and it is making informed decisions about what you watch and sending ads to all the devices in your house. Now, let's say you're on one of those devices. Okay. Let's say it's an Android device. Let's say you went to the Google Play, whatever it is, app store thing,
sure.
And you've downloaded some apps and some games. Well, a lot of these apps and games, not all of them, but a lot of them have partnered with this thing called Alfonso.
Alfonso.
So this is really interesting little piece of software that's attached to these apps. And what it will do is prompt you to enable the use of your microphone.
Right. And these would be things that do not ostensibly need that kind of access. Pool 3D, beer pong, trick shot, real bowling strike, 10 pen. You know, these kind of word salad-y names.
Yeah.
Little fun waste of time apps.
Well, and not just those. Some anti-spying software.
Sure.
There's a ton of apps out there.
Right, because it's this Alfonso is app agnostic.
Yes.
So here's what happens. Here's why they want that microphone access. Because when you're using this app or when you grant this app microphone access, Alfonso can figure out what you happen to watch by identifying audio signals in television ads and shows and even matching that information with the places people visit and the movies they see. Really quickly, here is how it works. So we're all hanging out. We're watching some television show that we're into. Let's go with Lost, something with commercials. So when the show switches to commercial, there is a pitch, an audio signal that goes out to the room. You cannot hear it. Your pets cannot hear it. Your kids cannot hear it. No one can hear it, and no one is supposed to hear it. It's only for your phone. That's what they do. They communicate with your phone. And then the phone will also let people know via Alfonso. The phone will let the users of the app, the real app, the users of Alfonso, understand who is in that room, where they came from, maybe where they're going, and what they would like to buy. That's not what you sign up for when you walk, you know, you go to a potluck at your friend's house to watch some kind of film, right? And how many apps are we talking here?
Well, okay, so according to the New York Times, there were over 250 apps on the Google Play Store with this feature, right? And if you head over to the Google Play Store and you type in quotations, Alfonso Automated, that's Alfonso Automated, and you will find all of the various apps that have this thing installed. But then if you look at an interview with some Alfonso people, they said that there are thousands of apps that they've partnered with, and they didn't want to disclose all of them because they have competitors who are trying to basically get
poach
in on
them.
Their territory.
Yeah.
Yeah, poach their territory.
Remember when spyware was a big concern? This is like some next level spyware.
This is spyware.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like different, right? It's like it literally is.
It's opt-in.
Right. It's spying on you. It's crazy.
And now we know it's cyclical. So it's all of the devices functioning together in this web of trying to figure out what you want the most and how to display that thing to you the most effectively.
A gestalt effect, yeah. This problem becomes complicated even further when we realize that private entity institutions are not the only actors in this sphere. Indeed, they may be some of the more innocuous. I love that you mentioned spyware, Noel, because the best spyware right now is being built not by private industry, but by state actors. We mentioned Amazon's partners, right? Amazon's partners using the data. Amazon's partners are Alphabet Soup intelligence agencies, or strongly thought to be so. Allegedly.
Especially thanks to that early cash injection.
Right, exactly. So according to a Washington Post article from 2017, the United States government has already turned theoretical exploits and vulnerabilities in this kind of stuff into functioning attack tools. One of these goes by the objectively badass name Weeping Angel. Weeping Angel is specifically meant to target Samsung TVs. This is just a small microcosmic example, and this is at least what it was doing 2 years ago. According to WikiLeaks, after infestation, Weeping Angel places a target TV in a fake off mode so that the owner believes the TV's off when it's still on. And then in this fake off mode, the TV operates as a bug, recording conversations in the room and then sending them over the cloud to a covert CIA server. This sounds bonkers. This sounds bananas. I can't believe it's real.
Why would anybody ever be paranoid that they're being listened to?
Right.
Why would they?
That's crazy.
And I hope whomever is listening to this around a smart television has unplugged their headphones and is listening on speaker.
You know, okay, look, everything – I just have to say this. Everything we've been discussing today, if you are of a certain mind, perhaps like myself quite a lot, quite frequently, it could lead you down a dark pathway where it feels as though – there's surveillance everywhere and you're being targeted in some way. We can assure you this is not just about you, no matter what you may think or no matter what you may believe.
Sure.
It's mass. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. And again, it is not necessarily nefarious, but it's real.
That's a matter of perspective. There is a certain self-importance or aggrandizing that occurs when people are suffering from paranoid delusions, right? But being paranoid about this sort of stuff does not make you delusional. It means that you have unfortunately turned over the rock and you've seen the thing squirming in the darkness beneath. This is very real stuff.
I love that, and I also am terrified by it.
But, you know, it's not all bad. I mean, there are ways of kind of at least stemming some of this stuff a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So How To Geek actually has an easy-to-follow guide on how to stop Google Home from recording you all the time. Google Home has a thing where it actually saves your voice memo, so you can check that out. You have to opt in for constant recording, allegedly. Well, you can, if you're an existing user, opt out.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. They've updated their terms of service, basically Google Home has.
Right.
And actually, Amazon has done something similar there where you have more choices now. But if you're a legacy user, you actually can't get out of some of the agreements you already signed into.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah. Somebody fact-checked me on that, but I recall reading that this morning. Here's the good thing. Remember Samba TV we were talking about that felt so creepy? Literally all you have to do is say disable when you get to that screen and you're installing your TV. That's all you have to do, and you're done.
Do you really not think it has something – like why do you think people are so prone, 90% is such a massive like amount, like are so prone to click enable?
Because you've got a new toy.
You want to take full advantage because it's presented, like I said, as this lovely way of like making this a better experience for you, the user. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I want that?
Well, and it's a menu that you have to click through, right? So think about it this way. If it's on enable, so your cursor is on enable when the screen pops up, you'd have to go down to terms of service, down to privacy policy, down to learn more, down one more to disable.
The clicks.
As stupid as that sounds and, you know, benign as five clicks or four clicks, people will take the easier route and just say, okay, fine, enable.
I'm in a hurry. I can't do that. I got MF places to be. You know what I mean?
It's true.
So it is true, and it's an exploit not just of technology, but an exploit of our own hardwired physiology. Our brains are built to function this way, right? And this leads us to some conclusions in what is very much an ongoing event, right? The first conclusion is that there are some issues remaining. There's a lack of accountability. One of the primary issues in this conversation is the utter lack of accountability on the part of private institutions as well as government agencies. It is not difficult to imagine these companies cooperating with intelligence agencies, further exacerbating the legal pitfalls involved. And again, it's important to point out, just as a cheapskate, it's important to point out that the people getting their data gathered are not paid for that information. Quite the opposite. It used to be, you know, what's that old adage we always said? If you're not paying for it, you're not the customer, you're the product,
yes,
right? But now the pendulum swings a little bit further in the wrong direction, in my opinion, because we are paying for these services.
Yeah.
We are paying Amazon, we are paying Google to spy on us to whatever end, and we are not accounting, not only for this, we're not accounting for the larger problem, which is that insurance companies aggregate this information, your financial institutions aggregate this information, and there is nothing that stops them from cooperating together to build a footprint of you close enough. The idea is that this footprint, this digital impression of you will one day have the fidelity such that it can predict future actions you will take.
So you're saying that it could, in theory, be used against you?
Yes, very much so.
We're saying they're going to make Android versions of you, Noel.
I'm cool with that. I could use some help.
Yeah, but it's not going to be about you anymore.
No.
No, it's going to be Amazon Androids.
Like a cloud clone of me?
And yeah. And it's fascinating when you think about it because
I'm joking, by the way. No, I know you're not joking though.
We're
it's
on
like
the
a,
cusp.
It's like a shape of me that is my data, you know, like that's out there in the matrix. It's a Noel shaped data cluster
or a Matt shaped data cluster, a Seth shaped cluster. Seth shaped cluster.
That sounds like a band.
Yeah,
it sounds
does,
like a
right?
tasty treat.
It does. I feel like it's maybe like a Hostess thing. So we are. Brilliant ideas for desserts and treats aside, we are all in this together. We are looking at the end of privacy as we recognize it. And that's sort of tricky. That sounds more dramatic than it really is because the concept of privacy as we know and enjoy it today is relatively recent.
Yes.
Right? And everything we've learned indicates that type of privacy we idealize may end up becoming a short-lived fad to future historians. We're entering, you know, Matt, you and I talked about this a long time ago, an inequality of privacy, right? Privacy is a new currency. Some of the world's most influential, powerful, successful people still have this kind of privacy, right?
Yeah. A weird example is just think about how much it costs to get a good tint on your windows. I'm not kidding. If you see someone drive by with perfectly tinted, like the darkest windows you've ever seen, that is expensive.
Mm. Well,
and that's literally privacy just in your car. Anyway, I'm sorry. It's
I feel
not
like
a great
you've got
example.
Something going on. Is your car okay? Do you need
I'm just saying that amount of privacy just to be on the road driving costs money.
I see. Yeah.
And if you think about really good shutters on a home or something like that, in those little examples, it takes quite a bit of means to protect yourself just from someone viewing with their eyeballs where you are at any time. And then if you apply that to the digital space, it gets more and more expensive.
It's creating something very similar in nuts and bolts and the mechanics of it to the infamous Sesame credit that's occurring in the Chinese mainland.
Ooh, precisely.
And I'm not being alarmist about this, and I don't want people to be any more frightened than is absolutely appropriate. You should be a little. We're at the Pandora problem, right? Once the Pandora's jar is unscrewed, once the lid is off, there is no going back. There were some rumblings in Congress about investigating what is essentially a smart TV spy ring, but the advantages of keeping the technology in play for now seem to outweigh the problems of consent. And the fact that consent is not occurring, and the fact that, yes, this could partner up with your information from other places, such that it might affect your ability to get a car loan. It might affect where you can live. This can get very dirty very quickly.
It's a slippery slope, and especially once – I mean, what if, like, we can't opt out anymore, you know, if that goes away? Like, are we really – owed that right to opt out? Like, it's sort of like almost a PR move to allow us to opt out. Like, you could very easily say, as the manufacturer of a product, say, well, if you don't want us to have your data, don't buy the product. Like, it's sort of like almost a courtesy, if you think about it, to allow people to opt out of this.
Yeah, but what
you
if
could just – are you owed a fancy television?
Well, but it's –
no.
No,
but, it's, but are you owed in are you required to participate in some of these systems? Insurance, one is required to do so.
Absolutely. Right? That's different, I think. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, with the television, all these are gadgets that, like, you could not necessarily call necessities.
Well, think about most people with a steady job. Think about email communication nowadays, or an app that's used wherever you work, or, you know, you have to have some kind of connection like that. You really do. And with most of these devices, you're going to run into these issues.
Or add to that the compounding, complicating factor that for the for a huge proportion of people who have mobile phones, it's their only way to access not just the internet, but it's their primary tool for any financial dealings.
Yes.
Like, people's lives hinge on this thing.
Yes.
So I see both sides of that. But here's what I think we can end with. We can say it's not just the United States. Way back in 2017, when WikiLeaks released this, they showed that digital spying is going to continue to grow. It's not going to go away.
We're talking about the Weeping Angel thing, right?
Right, Weeping Angel in specific, which again is just for Samsung TVs.
Yeah.
And it's relatively low tech. You have to put a USB stick in there. But now you don't. Now it's a whole different thing. You know, anybody got sort of irritated when you bought a new cell phone and it had stuff pre-installed that you can't move? Think about this times 1,000. That's what's happening. That's what's going to happen. And it's not just happening in the U.S. Other advanced nations, China, Russia, Britain, Israel, and so on, are creating newer, more robust, powerful tools to do this. And any nation that can gain access to this kind of spying technology is going to do so. And they can do it through a web of private industry. There are no laws. This is Wild West, and it's very bad. It's very bad for the people who are not at the top of the food chain.
And with that, we all threw away our devices. We got out our acoustic guitars, our ukuleles.
Sang Kumbaya.
I started writing my version of Ralph Waldo Emerson's On Nature, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Got our my djembe out, and we just started playing.
Finger cymbals.
Yep,
from
some
me.
Of those
Zills,
too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, communed with nature for the rest of our lives and watched the sunset dissipate over the horizon.
At an ashram in Quebec.
Yeah, and then we all woke up and went back to work.
Yeah, that's true. And hey, listen, I'm just being devil's advocate here about, like, are you owed a smart TV? And I agree.
It's
yes.
a great question.
Well, with the phone, though, you're right. The phone is, for many, an affordable entry point to the internet.
Yeah.
Because it doubles as a, you know, a crucial communication device and a way to access the internet, which we can all agree is a necessity for things like banking. Everything, you know, I mean, everything starts on the internet now.
The dark
sure.
web.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I would argue that for the things like, you know, an Alexa, do we need an Alexa? Maybe for accessibility. Maybe
no.
That's a thing. Maybe for, like, people with disabilities, an Alexa could be a very important addition to a home. For others, I think it's more of a luxury and sort of like a neat little gadget. You
no,
know?
You're absolutely right. And nobody needs a smart television monitor, right? But very soon, the only available televisions will be smart televisions, at least ones that are easily purchased.
I think what I was getting at when Ben talked about the Sesame Credit and the slippery slope of all this is, what if there does come a time where you can't opt out anymore? Just by buying the thing and installing it in your home, you're opting in. The only way to opt out is to not buy it or to buy something else.
There you go. Or go live in the woods and chop wood all day.
And while we're talking about needs and wants, there is one thing that we definitely want, and that is to hear from you. Do you think this is alarmist? Do you find yourself more on the side of, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, what are you worried about? You know, what's the big diff, right? Or are you more on the side of where you think this is an even more potentially dangerous situation than what we've outlined today? Let us know. We would love to hear from you. You can find us any number of ways. We're all over the internet. Not as widespread as the NSA, but you know, we're out there. You can find us. We're on Facebook at Here's Where It Gets Crazy, where you can talk to our favorite part of the show, your fellow listeners. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. The whole kit and caboodle, the whole bag of badgers, the whole nine. And that's not all.
Yeah, if you want to give us a phone call, you can leave a message. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you do leave a message, let us know if you'd like us to use your name on the air, if you want to remain anonymous, if it's just for us, it's for all the listeners. Just give us all that info up front. And if you don't want to do that, you can opt out. Oh, yeah, you can opt out. You can opt out of this whole thing. Just turn off your podcast player right now.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to do that and you want to send us an email, you can. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.